Hello everybody. Thank you, Brad, for the introduction. So I am Ravin Patra. I'm going to talk about the design and implementation of high-performance Wi-Fi networks called WildNet. So why are we interested in this problem? We are interested in this problem because we want to provide rural connectivity in developing regions. And the main reason is that currently there's a huge lack. For example, in India, only 5% of the people are connected to the internet, and even that is mostly scored to the urban areas, and rural areas, the connectivity even is even lower. And the situation is probably worse for countries in Africa. And we'll see soon how connectivity can improve and enable a lot of applications. So what do these rural areas look like? What's the scenario that we are talking about? So here we have some, say, villages which have rural clinics or kiosks or schools, and we might have a town which might be connected to the internet through an optical fiber uplink, or maybe not even. So what we want to do is to enable high bandwidth connectivity between these specific locations. We don't really care about a complete coverage and for every person because the user densities are usually lower, but we want to connect these specific locations for example, applications like telemedicine, doctors talking to patients in villages from cities, or sharing of content between universities, or distance education. So what have people been doing in the industrialized world for the same scenarios? So usually, you have wired solutions, like you just have lay fiber to each of these villages or the cities, or have copper or DSL connections. These things are very difficult in developing regions, just because of the capital costs and required in the infrastructure. And these things haven't happened as yet, and we don't expect them to happen in the near future. Cellular phones are spreading everywhere, even in the developing world. But we don't have that much coverage in rural areas. And even if you have coverage, the data bandwidth is not sufficient. And it's generally very costly to enable applications like video conferencing for telemedicine. There are other solutions which are typically proposed for rural areas, like VSATs, which connect to satellites. They have been there for some time, but they have a high delay, not sufficient bandwidth, and they're also high cost, usually. WiMAX is the upcoming solution where you have this is a typical scenario where you have a big tower in the middle which can connect to all the villages. This tower is usually very tall, costly. The equipment of that is required, the base station is costly. And you need a sufficient mass of users to actually start deploying this to be cost effective. And finally, spectrum is very hard to find. Most countries of the world, WiMAX spectrum is still not free. So how do you do this? What we are interested in is point-to-point wireless solutions, where you have reasonably low-cost towers in some of this location and some relays, and then you have high bandwidth links to create a multi-hop network between these towers. And this is a solution which is very amenable to grassroots deployments. You can just start off with one link or two link and then grow as the requirement or number of points you want to connect increases. So what do we mean by these Wi-Fi based long distance networks? What do they constitute? So they use standard Wi-Fi radios. They use directional antennas to get the range. We can go up to 150 kilometers. We have tried that. And they have line of sight between towers. This is an example picture just showing the antenna and the router combination. But why do we use Wi-Fi in particular? Why not other wireless technologies? There are other directional wireless technologies as well. Especially because we use Wi-Fi because of the low cost. Because of volume manufacturing, Wi-Fi, even high-power Wi-Fi radios are available, and we can construct a node for less than $500. Spectrum is free in most parts of the world. We have open source drivers in Linux that we can actually change the protocol, as we'll see later how. And then you have good data rates, 11 Mbps in B, 11B, and even more with 11G. To give you some examples of actual deployments, here is what our experience has been. So we have a network in India which is for telemedicine of eye care. So we have doctors and hospitals talking to patients in rural clinics. We have a network in Ghana which is used for connecting an electronic library and links up to 100 kilometers. There are other projects which people have done. Apart from community wireless projects inside the United States, which are mostly for urban areas, there is a project in India, the Digital Gangetic Plains, and they use commercial Wi-Fi APs. There is this Akshaya project in South India, which uses not Wi-Fi, but other wireless equipment, and has 400 nodes, and there's a project in New Zealand as well. So there are all these deployments, and we have been doing this for a couple of years. But what's our experience? Our experience has been that the performance is not optimal. We don't get what we expect, especially the point-to-point performance. For example, on a link, 60-kilometer link in Ghana, we just get 0.6 Mbps TCP bandwidth, although we expect 6 Mbps when we measure using UDP. On a relay, if you want to run the links on a relay on the same channel, we just get 2 Mbps TCP. We'll see why this happens. Finally, we have very variable and high loss rates. So this is a graph of loss rate measured over 3 links over like 4 hours on the x-axis, as you can see on the x-axis, and y-axis shows the loss rate. You can see the regions where there's loss rate stays up at 60% for a long time, and there are spikes as well. So given all this experience, we decided to work on WildNet. And to solve these problems, WildNet does basically 3 things. The first thing is it fixes the problems in the Wi-Fi protocol by proposing an alternate MAC mechanism, that is replacing the CSMA MAC, which is a standard MAC, with a TDMA MAC. Secondly, we also synchronize the links. And this is important because long-distance wireless, especially in multi-hop scenario, is very different from omnidirectional antennas. And for this, we need synchronization of the links among each other. Finally, because of the variable channel loss, we also have to implement loss recovery mechanisms, which are different from the Wi-Fi MAC loss recovery mechanisms. And we can use a combination of mechanisms to get the required delay and bandwidth. But before I go into that, what are the design constraints? What are the constraints that we are limited by? The first thing is that we cannot change the hardware. So we can't just say that this file layer or this modulation scheme is better for long distance, so let's use that. We want to use standard high-power Wi-Fi radios. We can change the software, though. Secondly, we cannot change anything at the endpoint, but we can change stuff in the core of the network. We can change the routers to change, the routing or the network layer or transport layer or any other thing, which are usually limited in networking research. Thirdly, the routers are low power and inexpensive machines, so we cannot have any computation intensive thing going on there. And finally, we also want to make sure that we are spectrum efficient, that we want to run as much of the network as possible on the same channel. This is important if you want to run, say, Wi-Fi, translate Wi-Fi into some other frequency, say 900 megahertz, which are actually doing in Ghana, but we don't have the luxury to have many non-overlapping channels. So the rest of the talk I'm going to talk about what are the problems in the Wi-Fi protocol and how we overcome that. Secondly, I'll talk about the variable channel loss and the loss recovery mechanisms, and then I'll go into implementation and evaluation. So what's the problem? So the first problem is with the ACK mechanism of Wi-Fi. So in short, the way Wi-Fi ACKs work is that you send a packet, and then you wait for the ACK to come back from the receiver. It's very simple, but it's clearly very inefficient for long links. If you have long propagation delays, then you're going to waste most of your time just waiting for the ACK to come back. In fact, like for a 60-kilometer link, the propagation delay, the round-trip delay, is 400 microseconds, while the transmission time of packet could be as less as 500 microseconds. So half of the time is just wasted in waiting for the ACK to come back. There's another problem. The other problem is the ACK timeout. The Wi-Fi MAC protocol doesn't wait long enough for the ACK to come out. It has a maximum ACK timeout limit, and if the propagation delay is longer than that, then it will just ignore the ACKs which come after that. And this is really bad if your links are longer than which is specified by the maximum ACK timeout, which is not very high. So this shows what is the result. So on the x-axis, we have distance, and y-axis, we have throughput for different scenarios. And this we do on a channel emulator, which lets us change the propagation delay and other characteristics. So we plug in 2 radios to the 2 ends of the emulator, and you're sending UDP traffic, 11B UDP traffic in one direction. So when you are not waiting for ACKs at all, then the throughput is very, very constant. As it's obvious for any distance. But as soon as we start using ACKs, the utilization decreases. And it comes to a certain point at 110 kilometers, which corresponds to maximum ACK timeout, after which all the ACKs are just ignored by the sending MAC layer, and it just has to send the maximum number of ACKs. So that's why there's a sharp drop in the bandwidth. But that's not all. There's a second problem with propagation delay. That problem relates to the fact that if you have bad directional traffic on a long link, then there are collisions. And why is that? The reason is the carrier sense mechanism. So Wi-Fi's carrier sense mechanism is very simple. So you hear for the channel, hear the channel for a certain amount of time, which is called the diff time. And if you don't hear anything, you assume it's free. So what happens on a long distance link? If you have, say, sending a packet from A to B, A listens for the channel for the diff time and sees it to be free, sends a packet. B does the same thing, and there's a collision because B has a half duplex radio, and if it starts to receive a packet while it's sending anything, it'll just ignore it. So anytime you have the propagation delay more than the diff timeout, then the probability of this collision increases, And this can be seen in this graph. Again, on the channel emulator, you have bidirectional traffic this time, and the throughput clearly decreases with distance, and the decrease is quite substantial, as you can see. So to handle these two problems, we come up with these design choices. The first thing is to increase the channel utilization, we just use a sliding window protocol. Instead of a per packet stop and wait, you send packets in a batch. Secondly, to eliminate the losses from collisions, we just have a TDMA-based, so you have a time division multiple access MAC layer on every link, and you have alternate send and receive slots instead of CSMA. But there is one other thing. So multi-hop long-distance networks are the way synchronization works and the way interference works is very different from omnidirectional radios, especially because at every node you have separate radios, independent radios going towards every link and every other neighboring link. So you want to use both these radios simultaneously as much as possible. So here is what happens when you want to try to send simultaneously to both these radios. So ideally it should be possible because B and C are very far from each other. So there's no chance of any collision happening there. So you want to send packets from A to both B and C at the same time. But if you use CSMA, it's not possible. The reason is that as soon as you start sending from A to C, the link from A to B will just back off because the signal strength is pretty strong from the first transmission. And the solution is just to disable carrier sends, and then you can do this simultaneous send. You also want to receive simultaneously from both B and C to A. And this is possible as long as you're using directional antennas, and the signal strength of B is sufficiently stronger than C at antenna one, say. So if it's at least 12 dB stronger, we have seen this from measurements, then you can simultaneously receive from both B and C at antenna one and two, respectively. What you want to clearly avoid is to mix up these two, that if you're sending to C, then you don't want to receive anything from B because the signal from the packet that's going to C will completely overpower any reception. So the takeaway message from this slide is that as long as you synchronize the transmits and receives and you do them at the same time, you can actually run multiple links, not just two, at a particular node on the same channel and you get the same performance as you would get with standard Wi-Fi if you're running on different channels. So this is clearly more spectrum efficient. But if you have TDMA, then you also have to synchronize the slots. So what do we use? So we use an implicit mechanism, which is this is an example, you have a sender and a receiver, and you have the transmit slot and the receive slot. So what we do is, when you're trying to send a packet from the sender, we try and stamp it with the delta time difference between the start of the send slot and the actual time of transmission. And then this can be used by the receiver to align its own slots, to synchronize its receive slot and the next transmit slot. This is different from a mechanism in which you actually send an explicit marker at the end of the slot to signify the end of the slot, because that mechanism doesn't handle, is not very resilient to situations where you have channel loss. If you lose the marker packet, then you can have large offset difference between the slots, and that might lead to loss of efficiency in the use of the channel. Well, I've talked about the problems in the Wi-Fi protocol and what we do. Essentially, we change the MAC layer from CSMA to TDMA, and then that way we can overcome those losses that happen because of collisions. But that's not enough. In the field, when we actually deploy these links, we also see large loss in the channel because of other reasons, because of other external reasons. And what are those reasons? The main reason is external traffic. We have seen that there's high correlation between external traffic and actually loss observed on a channel, and the main reason is that the directional nature of the links. So here, if you are trying to send data from A to B, because of the directionality, any interfering source which is near B is unlikely that it will hear transmissions from A. And even if it hears them, it's unlikely that it will hear them in time because of the propagation delay involved. So we see much more higher loss in these long-distance links from external traffic than what you see in an omnidirectional network, if you have omnidirectional radios in a mesh network. And that makes our problem a little harder. So what do we do? So what we use is a mix of two loss recovery mechanisms, bulk acts and FEC. So what's the first mechanism? Bulk acts is basically built upon on the sliding window protocol, which is used by the TDMA. So since we batch packets together, we can also batch acts together, and we can send aggregate acts. In fact, we send bit vectors, so we only need to retransmit packets which are actually lost. The second mechanism is FEC, It's an adaptive FSC which needs to estimate the loss on a channel, and then it can proactively encode packets and send redundant packets on a link. So the key point is that you want to combine these two mechanisms. There's a trade-off between these two, because bulk ACKs are clearly more bandwidth efficient. They only retransmit packets only when it's actually necessary. And they can be used for bulk traffic or TCP. But FSC is good for multimedia traffic like voice and video, because it proactively encodes packets. But you need to estimate the loss on the channel, and that's hard. Well, I've talked about the different mechanisms we use to overcome protocol problems and the channel loss. We'll go into the implementation. To give you just a recap of the design, we use TDMA instead of CSMA on every link. We have loose time synchronization, so we can achieve spectrum efficiency and eliminate interlink interference. And finally, we have a combination of two loss recovery mechanisms at the link layer. So the brief overview of the implementation. We have to modify a few things in the driver. We have to disable ACKs and the carrier sense. This is the Atheros MAD Wi-Fi driver. Secondly, we use the Qlik router framework. It's very easy to intercept packets, create virtual interfaces, and we can modify the headers and queue packets inside the MAC layer. And thirdly, we use the FEC library, in which we send original packets first, so we only have to decode when there's actual loss on the channel. So what do you want to do in the evaluation? The first thing you want to see is how does WildNet mitigate all the protocol losses on a single channel, and what improvement we get with that. Secondly, we want to see how do we get spectrum efficiency when we have multiple links at a particular node. Thirdly, we want to see how we can get a trade-off between bulk ACKs and FEC to get desired delay and bandwidth. So on a single hop, this is what happens. So here is a graph where you have changing distance on the x-axis, and y-axis shows the throughput when you are trying to send TCP flows in both directions on a particular link. This is again on the channel emulator. So with WildNet, we can see that the bandwidth is throughput is pretty constant at even large distances, and which is about 2.5 times better than if you use CSMA. And this is the same even if you have high channel loss. If you have 10% channel loss, we still show constant throughput and two times improvement. What happens on outdoor links? So here I have a list of three links with increasing distance, and we can see that as the link distance increases from 8 to 45 kilometers to 65 kilometers, the improvement of WildNet increases. In fact, at 65 kilometers, we are almost 8 times better. And this is clearly because at those distances, TCP has a lot of collisions from bidirectional traffic, and this is TCP flowing in both directions. One thing to notice is that if you're just sending TCP in one direction, improvement is lower. In fact, sometimes CSMA is better, and this is just because we are just sending traffic in only half of the time. So if you have 50% slots, you have alternate send and receive slots, and that's the main reason that the bandwidth is same or lower. But what happens in a multi-hop scenario? So here is just a simple two-hop network, 19 kilometers and 1.5 kilometers. The first result we see is what happens with standard CSMA. So here we see that the bandwidth throughput achieved over a relay over a two-hop network is very different whether it's the same channel or the different channels. Because when you have different channels, you eliminate losses from the transmits and receives on the center node. But if you're using WildNet, then we get the same performance, same throughput whether you use the same channel or different channel. This clearly means that we can use the spectrum more efficiently by synchronizing the transmits and receives. And this is very important in a large network. Finally, just to talk about the trade-off between bulk ACKs and FEC, here we have a single link which has a 50% channel loss. And on the x-axis, we have the final loss rate that we achieve after using a combination of FEC and bulk ACKs. And on the y-axis is what is the delay we get. So each curve, we have increasing retries from the right side to the left side. So as we increase the retry, we decrease the final loss rate, but we also increase the delay. The slots here are about 20 milliseconds long. So the first curve is when we are not using FEC at all. So the delay increases to 120 milliseconds if you are trying to get zero loss on the channel. If you add FEC with about 37% overhead, then you decrease the delay to 60 milliseconds, but you also lose the 37.5% bandwidth by using redundancy of FEC. We can decrease it even further to 40 milliseconds, but you increase the overhead a little more. So looking at this graph, we can operate in different points according to the application. So if you're just interested in bandwidth, then you can go to the top part and be satisfied with high delay. But if you're interested in, say, multimedia traffic, then we can go to the lower part of this graph. So what do we conclude? So in summary, from the evaluation, we found out that on a single hop, we can eliminate Wi-Fi losses and get even up to 8%, 8 times better bandwidth at 60 kilometers. When you have multiple hops, then we can get optimal performance even while using the same channel by synchronizing the transmits and receives. And finally, depending on our application requirements, we can have a combination of FEC and bulk acts, and we can get the required delay and bandwidth. So just to brief talk about the future work, well, we talked about single channel operation, and we talked about synchronization over a single link, or of a link of a node with multiple links. But it's a harder problem if you're talking about a larger network. How do you synchronize and achieve slot scheduling for a larger network, or even guarantee end-to-end performance over a larger network? So that's a much more bigger problem, especially if you have more channels. So can you actually use more channels, non-overlapping channels, to get even better performance? Secondly, we are trying to also deploy WildNet over more places and try to evaluate its performance in India and in Ghana and Guinea-Bissau. Lastly, I've talked about the network protocol issues, but there are more issues in running these networks. The biggest one is remote management, because you don't have people with expertise in most of these places, so you want to have mechanisms for automatic monitoring and diagnosis and recovery so that local people can easily manage these networks or even fix these networks. One other point is, how do you plan these networks? It's important to optimize the cost of these networks. So optimize the cost of the towers or the location of the towers. So that's a whole huge issue as well. Well, that's all. Here's some pictures of the video conferencing going on, and some of us climbing towers to put up antennas. It's not really safe, but thank you.
Hi, Matt Welsh from Harvard. This is very cool stuff. So I guess I'm trying to figure out what problem you're really trying to solve here. So clearly you want to get good throughput. Clearly you want low delay. But obviously that has a lot to do with the kind of traffic that you're trying to carry over this network. And what I'm trying to understand is, are you trying to optimize performance for people browsing web pages? Or are you trying to optimize bulk transfer of, say, email or DTN style, UUCP for large amounts of data that could be done offline? I'm just trying to figure out, what the real problem is here.
The thing is that a lot of these places, I mean, for example, this video conferencing, telemedicine application deployment, there's a mix of things you want to do. I mean, there are people trying to send high resolution images of the eye or the retina. At the same time, they're also doing video conferencing. Real-time video conferencing. You want to do both at the same time. So then you come into, can you have different traffic classes, actually? Maybe you can have different retry limits for different types of classes of traffic. And so for the video, can have a lesser retry limit than the TCP traffic or the image transferring traffic.
So So, I mean, you are worried about interactive.
We are worried about interactive.
And VoIP-style things.
Yeah,
and I think that's really important, because we could skirt around this problem just by saying, look, you're not allowed to browse the web over this.
We're going to deliver email
overnight or something like that. So
actually, the next step of this this type of deployment is to also have a point-to-multipoint solution where the last hop you don't need a TDMA Mac for that, but you need a Mac which has, say, lesser delay. But even lesser throughput is okay if you're doing VoIP type of things.
Next year, come back and run BitTorrent over this.
Hopefully.
And that'll tie the whole conference together.
Thank you.
Hi, Ranveer Chandra, Microsoft Research. What I was interested to know is, this is an interesting attempt to solve a long-distance MAC problem, right? That is a MAC over a long-distance link. Have you compared against other systems like WiMAX or even 802.22, right? The ones that are talking of cognitive networking and they also have long distance links, and they have a similar MAC, right? They use TDMA and they use their counters are different than what Wi-Fi has. So have you compared against those schemes, and will they work in your kind of scenario?
So I mean, comparison, actual evaluation, that we haven't done. That's we want to do that. But just to talk to you about WiMAX, it has the same TDMA layer, and in some sense we are not opposed to WiMAX. I mean, we can use the same file layer. But you run into the same problems of multiple link synchronization on multiple hops. So WiMAX doesn't do that. And if you look at it currently, it's not feasible. I mean, this base stations are still $10,000. The cost is still $10,000. And maybe the next mobile standard of WiMAX will bring that cost down. And if you can use that filer to use similar techniques, then why not? We can do that also.
Hey, Micah Brodsky, MIT. So I'm curious about, I have two questions. But okay. First is, I'm curious about the decision you made that you shouldn't be thinking about hardware changes, because have you made any estimates of how big the effective market could be if this sort of technology was deployed? It might potentially be big enough to drive an ASIC, in which case you might well want to be thinking about, you know, how should a good radio design be, instead of taking a radio design for, you know, networks in a conference room in a home and trying to use it over 100 kilometers. Things like, you know, cross packet coding, using the taking the packet as sort of a given, you could be losing a huge amount there. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, that's a good point, that if it's actually possible to make cheap hardware, then we can. There could be certainly many improvements which you can do here. And WiMAX goes kind of little towards that, because it can have variable channel widths, spectrum widths, and you can have sub OFDM channels, and you can try to do that also. We haven't really given much thought to it, because I think we still believe that any new solution won't be able to reach the cost point of Wi-Fi, because Wi-Fi is just, the manufacturing is so huge all over the world. But that could be an interesting theoretical problem to look at.
The other question is, well,
a very quick question, Shimon Hachowski, MIT. So in your two-hop outdoor evaluation, you see no improvement in wired when you have two channels? Is it because the two channels are not orthogonal, or is it because your two hops on a single channel don't interfere?
Well, the key thing here is that, even if you have two channels, you're still limited by the half duplex radio. So you cannot do transmit and receive at the same time. So what you want to do is operate the radio in some mode, or transmitting or receiving at all times. And that you can do with a single channel as well. So the two channels doesn't give you anything extra. So even if you have a single channel, you can transmit on both the links at the same time, and then you start receiving. So you're using the radio at full capacity. So that's why you get the same performance. Thank you.